We have to hurry,
Titania said quickly in her light, tinkling voice. The first guests will arrive shortly. She was leading her toward the dessert table. Minerva followed willingly.
How will they all arrive here so quickly?
She asked. She'd been wondering this anyway.
The moving floor picks them up,
the fairy replied distractedly.
Okay, is this the dessert that mortals call mousse? One of the royal court members has been wanting to try it, but she's never been in the mortal realm, so it was a little hard getting the info from her mind.
Minerva glanced at the dish and bit her lip. The crystal bowl was dusted with gold. The chocolate inside was cut into the shape of diamonds, and icing that appeared to have gemstone dust in it had been used as perfect, thin piping in exquisite, intricate design. There were layers to the dessert as well, each a different shade of chocolate. It was a display no mortal cook on earth would have been capable of creating, especially in the time frame the Fey cooks had been afforded. But it did look a little like chocolate mousse. It looked like chocolate mousse, and a trillion bucks had gotten together and had a chocolate baby.
Yeah, that looks about right, she replied, mystified. What do you mean the mover picks them up?
Titania glanced back at her and giggled.
My lady, why do you think it's called the moving floor?
The truth was, she had wondered, and her stomach had done a little flip-flop at the thought of an enormous, unprotected platform shaking free from its foundations and floating over the realm like a gigantic frisbee. But she'd pushed it out of her mind and concentrated on everything else that was happening, which, lucky for her, wasn't that hard.
Because it flies around and picks people up,
she answered dully. Her gut tightened, and she absently pressed her hand to it. The fairy straightened, her expression growing concerned.
Oh, my lady, please don't worry. There's absolutely nothing to be concerned about. The mover is very, very old, and has been used by the king on hundreds of occasions. It's perfectly safe, and I must tell you it's quite wonderful.
She grinned, winked a luminous pink-purple eye, and rocked forward onto her tiptoes.
Wait until you see your land from above, especially at daybreak. There is no vision so breathtaking.
Minerva forced a smile and dropped her hand. Titania's expression became serious then. She rested back on the soles of her feet and clasped her hands together in front of her.
You know, when there are matters of the realm that need a sovereign's attention, you are as much entitled to handle them as the king, if not more so.
Minerva blinked. She glanced back over her shoulder to where Caliban and a group of other men stood. They were animated, raising their hands in earnest, their expressions troubled, their faces pale and taut with concern. He'd told her earlier that those particular Fae were known as Lubrain. Like the Korred, they resembled humans but for one trait that set them apart. While the Korred possessed ears like elves, in the Lubrain's case, it was eyes that resembled cat's eyes, with elongated pupils and yellow-gold irises. They looked troubled, but Caliban stood tall and confident, his mannerisms easy and controlled, and as Minerva looked on, the Lubrain calmed down, eventually even smiling and bowing low before they left.
I don't know the first thing about being a queen, Titania,
Minerva whispered.
It's not time yet for me to get involved.
She turned back to the fairy, who was studying her carefully.
You didn't really want to ask me about the mousse, did you?
Titania smiled guiltily.
Well, it doesn't hurt to get a mortal perspective on something created by mortals, but no. I knew you were uncomfortable, and that what you really wanted was a way out. And that's my job, my lady, to make you comfortable.
Now it was Minerva's turn to smile.
Thank you,
she said gratefully. She meant it. Titania laughed.
I understand. You're being thrown to the sharks, and some unseelie fae are, well, I can see why you'd want to ease into this, but you won't be alone.
She nodded at something over Minerva's shoulder, and Minerva turned to see that the Lubrain had departed. Caliban was heading toward her, his stride long, his eyes fastened on hers.
"And you were born to do this, my lady. Never forget that."
Chapter 22. Caliban took Miniver's hand and held it firmly in his as the floor began to rumble. He'd made sure to explain everything that would happen so she would be prepared, but even so, he could feel her tense beneath his grip. She watched the edges of the moving floor with wary excitement as it magically separated from the surrounding walls. Overhead, the ceiling shimmered and then vanished, leaving the great hall open up to the vast, star-filled night sky. Miniver looked up, her gaze filled with awe. The small blue flames at the centers of her pupils flickered admiringly, dancing to life with the flux of her excitement. The mover lifted then, smoothly as ever, and Miniver looked down suddenly, taking a step back that brought her closer to Caliban. He smiled, stealing the opportunity to release her hand, and instead slide his arm around her slim waist. He used that hold to pull her up against him as the moving floor rose above the walls of the great hall and was at last free of its earthly hold. The magic that had created the mover long ago now protected its passengers from the effects of its flight. There was no wind. There were no inclement weather or temperature changes. There were no insects. After a few moments of free, smooth flight, Miniver relaxed beside Cal and looked up at him with a bright, beaming smile. It took his breath away.
"I'm going to the edge,"
she told him with the exuberance of a child. She pulled free from his grasp, lifted her skirts, and hastened to the mover's edge. Caliban stood frozen, still in the magic spell of that unequaled smile, and watched her scoot up right along the outer limits of the floor to look down. Though he'd ridden the moving floor thousands of times, and knew well that it was impossible for anyone to fall off its edges, the sight of her there, inches away from such a prospect, made his heart feel like ice. A terrible sensation swept through him. Caliban recognized it as fear, but it was unlike any fear he'd ever before known. It was the kind of fear one experienced when they suddenly had something to lose, and that something would destroy them to live without because it meant more than life itself. There was no fear in the realms like it. And now Caliban knew it firsthand. "She's going to kill me," he thought suddenly. He sensed a change in him, the burgeoning of a weakness. He stood there and could imagine the years to come, if he was lucky, in which he wondered where she was when she wasn't beside him, in which he missed her, worried about her, and yearned for her. This was a fragility that was utterly and painfully new. It was ironic to him that his queen, the one thing in the multiverse that could make him more powerful than he was already, was also the one thing that could bring him to his knees. There was a depth to him now that was positively exploitable. He would have to stay on his toes. The lifetimes to come were going to be one wild ride. Miniver marveled at the ground that sped by below. Roads paved with multicolored stones, rooftops constructed of everything from thatch to carved stone tile, and gardens with mazes, rows of strange vegetables and flowers, and even fountains blurred by at exhilarating speeds. She found herself laughing with delight when the tops of impossibly tall fey trees nearly skimmed the bottom of the platform. She placed her hand to her chest and looked up, grinning like an idiot at the multitude of stars that glittered like pixie fire and diamonds strewn across the sable night sky. She felt high, as if she'd been sipping moonshine or smoking some exotic fairy weed. She didn't know how long she'd been standing there admiring the view when she heard voices behind her, and turned to find that the first of the invited guests were arriving. They appeared through an archway at one end of the platform. It acted almost as a portal, sucking people up from below and presenting them on the landing to the mover. Miniver imagined it working a little like a Star Trek transporter beam. It even looked similar, removing the guests from below and causing them to reappear in a cloud of sparkling energy until they were once more fully materialized. Titania the fairy suddenly appeared at Minerva's side.
"Here they come,"
she said excitedly. The first guests were two women and a man, all, of course, dressed regally.
"That's Andari Noble, her husband and their daughter. She's been in the Unseelie Court for 900 years.
Andari Noble was a tall, stately woman with purple and silver-striped hair, yellow eyes, and skin the color of an eggplant. Her husband was perhaps an inch or two taller, with similar eyes and skin, but with all gray hair. Their daughter, a stunning young woman whose skin was slightly lighter in color, possessed hair that was all purple, but for a single silver stripe behind her left ear.
"Lady Noble and her family are Endray,"
supplied Titania.
"Very mild-mannered for Unseelie, and very reliable. Lady Noble has been a loyal supporter her entire life. Not much means more to her than the security of the throne."
Titania smiled at Minerva.
"Which means she will probably become your best friend before too long, and a good friend to have, too. She's quite powerful amongst the Endray, which makes up a good portion of the Unseelie population."
Minerva nodded. She made a mental note to be on her very best behavior around this particular woman. She wondered whether her sister had been forced to face this sort of thing yet. In fact, she wondered how Selene was in general. Caliban had told her earlier that Selene was safe with Avery, the Seelie King, and that she was content as the queen of their realm. It wasn't safe yet to visit her. Their enemy would expect the twins to want to reunite. Minerva understood that, and for the most part she accepted it. She and Selene had always been close, but they were not conjoined. They weren't the kind of twins who couldn't stand to be apart. It was enough at the moment to know that Selene was safe.
"The daughter's name is Linnea. You'll notice her earrings," added Titania softly,
leaning a little toward her for privacy. Minerva had noticed them, in fact. They were long, dangling earrings composed entirely of a pastel rainbow of sparkling gemstones.
"Those were a gift from her husband-to-be, Jennet, a Corrid Fae who will be arriving shortly."
The earrings were beautiful.
"Got it,"
said Minerva, who was quite proud that she was catching on to this political stuff pretty quickly.
"So I'll make sure to congratulate her on the upcoming engagement."
Titania's smile became a proud grin.
"Exactly."
She took Minerva's hand and patted it comfortingly.
"You are indeed catching on quick, which is good,"
she added, releasing her and turning toward the archway where more guests were arriving in quick succession.
"Because you're about to get a comprehensive lesson on the entire Unseelie realm."
Time moved strangely on the platform. The world literally blurred by, and it was always night, and there were always new guests, so it was an indeterminate amount of time later that Minerva glanced up from the group she'd been conversing with to find a new group of guests arriving at the archway. This time, it was not only interest that was piqued by their appearance. It was fear. Titania was at her side at once, and there was a gentle hand beneath Minerva's elbow, as if to steady her. She watched Caliban approach the newcomers, ever tall and confident, but this time Minerva felt something other than pride at the king's appearance and mannerisms. She felt nervous, as if she were afraid for him.
"My lady, there is no cause for alarm. I understand their appearance is unsettling, but you are perfectly safe here."
Minerva swallowed, but it was hard to get past the lump that had formed in her throat. Her mouth had gone dry. The men who'd arrived looked as though they might have come directly from a Hollywood movie set. They were all tall, they were all dressed in tailored and fine dark clothing, and they were all breathtakingly handsome. From chiseled features to strong chins to perfect broad-shouldered builds. Their eyes were so vivid, she could see them even from a distance, slashes of green and blue hues that would make any woman melt. However, beyond this facade of genteel beauty, there was a savage core, and Minerva recognized it at once.
"Why are they scaring me so much?"
she whispered aloud, leaning toward Titania. At once the men at the archway looked up, each of them zeroing in on her with their cold, beautiful eyes. Titania quickly took her queen by the elbow and pulled her further away from the archway. Minerva felt the men's eyes on her as she retreated, and her body moved stiffly, almost mechanically. Once she and Titania reached the outer edge of the platform, Titania turned to her, taking her hands in her own and squeezing tight.
"You see them for what they truly are, because you are the born queen. Only a very powerful Thay could glimpse past their glamour. You breached their masks with ease."
It was a poetic way to describe it, really, since all Minerva saw was what was there, three painfully handsome men. There was no real mask to see past. But it would have been difficult to describe any other way, and Minerva understood totally what Titania meant by her words.
"Titania,"
she said, as she chanced a glance in their direction, only to find that Caliban had reached them, and their attention was now on their king.
"What are they?"
The tightness in her chest made her voice tremble.
"In the mortal realm, you have legends and myths that speak of certain creatures who resemble humans, but are really something much, much more dangerous."
Hesitantly, Minerva nodded.
"Well,"
said Titania, with a knowing glance in the direction of the newcomers,
"usually those legends and myths are true, and we have them in the Fey realms as well."
Chapter 23 The arrival of the three men had caused a stir. Caliban could sense the immediate unease on the platform, traveling through the party's revelers like a rippling wave of disquiet. But this night was not an event solely for the trusted. It was for the Unseelie as a whole, the entire spectrum of its many darknesses. They were known as the Malek Tal. They lived in very close proximity to the Shades, in the unlit forest on the far edge of the Unseelie realm, where it bordered the Shadow Kingdom. The Malek Tal, named for their leader Malek, had lived there for as long as the Unseelie had recorded their history. No one save Lord Malek himself knew how they'd come into being, and in all these years none of them had ever died. Their number remained constant. They were immortal in nearly every sense of the word. Like the mortal legend of their human counterparts, the vampire, the Malek Tal were infamous for one reason alone. They subsisted solely on the blood of their fellow man. The very long, very sharp, and very deadly fangs they sported beneath the glamour that hid them so well were testament to their true design. Outwardly, their male society was beautiful, calm, refined, and highly intelligent. On the inside, however, they were pure predators. Always hungry, always hunting, ever on the prowl. They did not proliferate. Again, their numbers never changed. The same sensations, both emotional and physical, that other species achieved and yearned for through traditional copulation, the Tal experienced during blood exchange. It was sensual but violent, and normally left their victims cold. The single and small upside of this pattern was that the Tal needed to feed only once a month. They normally chose women who were not needed by society, either fey, mortal, or otherwise, and made certain to erase all evidence they'd ever existed. On the rare occasion the Tal allowed a victim to live, the bitten was considered chosen and given a choice. They could remain alive as a slave to the Tal who'd bitten them, or they could be taken before their leader, the original Malek, to be erased. Their memory would be wiped clean of the traumatic event, and they would be set free. Rarely did this last, however. The Malek Tal had chosen them and allowed them to live for a reason, after all, and the breed was tenacious, if anything. Hence the cycle was almost always repeated until, eventually, the woman grew too weak to resist any longer. She would become a slave and would later die of a weak constitution. For this reason, the leader of the Malek Tal strongly discouraged becoming attached to any victim. It wasn't nice to play with your food. They were not what one would call a benevolent society. The others on the platform had good reason to be wary of them. Caliban had seriously considered not inviting the Malak Tal to this engagement. However, the unseelie Fae were considered unholy, unlucky, and every other synonym for bad, because the plain truth of it was, that's what they were. All manner of very dangerous breed inhabited the unseelie realm. Minerva was their queen, and as such, she very much needed to be aware of their existence in the world she now ruled. It would do no good to hide anything within its borders from her. When he sensed their arrival, Caliban made haste to greet the Tal, knowing instinctively that they would sense Minerva in the room, feel her intense magic, and view her as one hell of a potential meal. He was no fool. Minerva was exquisite, inside and out. He'd expected that they would desire her. It was simply impossible for their kind not to do so. But the intensity and speed with which they'd honed in on her, and the swell of hunger he sensed from them, admittedly forced roaring, painful flames once more into his own gaze. It was something he'd hoped to avoid, this unconscious clashing of power over the most tempting woman in the realm. Not only because it physically hurt when the fire in him lit up, but because he didn't really want the moving floor to become a battlefield that night. Fortunately, one of the three representatives to arrive that night was none other than the leader of the Malak Tal himself, Lord Malak. He no doubt noticed the fire in Caliban's eyes immediately, and being the skilled diplomat that he was, Malak at once bowed, showing both respect and reverence. He then made a point to express to the king his gratitude that he and his men had been invited to the engagement event. All in all, the exchange went over well. Once she pressed stubbornly past the fact that every meal for the Tal equated to murder, it had to be admitted that they made good company. They were charming, quick-witted, and extremely disarming. It helped that Caliban himself had nothing to fear from them. The matter smoothed out so well, in fact, that Caliban was beginning to think it might be time to introduce the trio of Tal to his queen. That is, until he looked up to find Minerva no longer standing where he'd last seen her, and Dahlia Kellen standing in her place looking secretly very pleased with herself. "Oh, Mother Hell," he muttered aloud. Lord Malak, who'd been sharing a drink with him, glanced in Dahlia's direction to see what had upset him. Putting two and two together, he said, "An odd mortal colloquialism, but in this case, I would have to agree." Caliban was deep in conversation with the three Malak Tal. He spoke to them calmly, smiling with the perfect genteel ease of a man who could handle anything. He was the perfect king. "You have to get used to this," she told herself firmly. It was something she was going to have to learn to live with, this dealing pleasantly with people she didn't like. "This is your place now. Caliban is depending on you." But who was he anyway? In order to be the king of a land with people like those men, what kind of man did you have to be, yourself? "You've shared the most intimate form of passion with him, Minerva. You know damn well who Caliban is. You know what he is. You know better than this." But those men, those monsters wrapped in the finery of a gentle facade, they killed people for a living. No, they eat. A lot of animals in the mortal realm have to survive by eating living beings, too. What about natural carnivores like tigers and sharks? They have to eat, Minerva. And so do the Tal. Her stomach did a belly flop. But her inner voice kept at her, trying its best to convince her that the situation was not as bad as it seemed. "And that leader of theirs, Lord Malak, Titania said he had never taken a slave himself. She said he felt it was wrong. So he was a nice monster. That was about the best it could amount to." "You like cats," her inner voice pressed. "Cats kill more living beings than just about anything else on the planet." She pinched the bridge of her nose and gritted her teeth. The conversation she was having with herself wasn't doing any good, and frankly it was bordering on clinically insane. The hard fact of it was, she couldn't get past seeing the Tal as serial killers, and the Malak Tal were one race, one breed of Unseelie Fae. How many of the people in that room were just as bad? How many of the visages around her were nothing more than masks for monsters? She ran her hand over her face and turned away from them all to stare out at the black, blurred landscape that was so much more enchanting. Why her? Why had fate chosen her to become queen of this place? She was the most sensitive person in the realms, and she was supposed to rule over a race of evil bastards. She glanced back over her shoulder to see Titania holding up a tray of desserts for one of the guests. But the fairy's gaze was on Minerva. There was worry in her pink-purple eyes. Minerva knew the fairy could tell what she was thinking, how she was feeling, but she'd sent Titania away, also knowing that she needed to appear strong here and now if this queen thing was ever going to work. Titania had wanted to object, but Minerva was fairly certain the fairy agreed with the sentiment. Sometimes you had to be strong.
My lady.
Minerva turned fully when a female voice greeted her. The woman who'd approached her was a Tuath beauty by the name of Dahlia Kellen. The Tuath Fae were a very rare Fae race, very powerful, and every king of the Fae kingdoms had been a Tuath, including Avery the Seelie King, Daemon the Goblin King, and Caliban. Thus, sometimes the Tuath was simply referred to as nobles, and every Tuath in existence served in the royal courts. It was also the Tuath who had originally declared war on the Wishers, ringing in what was now referred to among the Fae as the time of the slaughter, and saw the near-complete end of Minerva's entire race. Minerva had met Dahlia and her sister Violet earlier that night at the archway, as the two had arrived. She'd instantly liked Violet, and instantly disliked Dahlia. There was just something about the woman.
"Lady Dahlia,"
Minerva greeted, forcing a friendly smile to her face. She'd had her whole life to practice.
"I hope you'll forgive me,"
Dahlia said with a sweet smile that would have flirted past any male defense in the mortal realm.
"But I saw that you were standing here alone, and I thought I might come check up on the new queen, so to speak." "That was thoughtful of you,"
insisted Minerva,
"but I'm fine. I'm just taking in the view."
She turned and gestured to the open air beside her at the edge of the platform. Dahlia took a few steps to the edge of the platform and looked down.
"Ah, yes," she said. "The Unseelie realm in all its glory."
Moonlight cast the land below into picture-perfect contrasts, creating roads of white on glass-like rivers and lakes, and lending a blue glow to the leaves of treetops. It seemed to go on forever, like the mesmer of a dream. Dahlia looked sideways at her.
"You must be very proud to have been granted its sovereignty."
Something about the way she'd said that gave Minerva a strange chill. She turned from the night view to watch the Tuath Fae with the wariness of a mouse watching a cat.
"We'll be reaching the Twixt soon,"
Dahlia continued.
"I'm sure you'll want to see how it's faring after all that has happened to it."
Minerva frowned and asked,
"What do you mean?"
She only realized after she'd said it that she probably shouldn't have. The queen should probably know everything that was transpiring in her realm. Dahlia faced her fully and looked at her with wide, innocent eyes.
"Why, the massacre between realms, of course."
She blinked, oozing more of that faux innocence that left Minerva feeling a little nauseated.
"I just assumed, I mean, since you're the one who caused it. I'm sorry."
She pretended to backpedal.
"I thought you were aware."
Minerva's gaze narrowed. She rolled her shoulders back and squared the other Fae with a hard look.
"What?"
she asked very firmly.
"Am I supposed to be aware of? What massacre are you referring to?"
Dahlia then pretended to look a little taken aback or even hurt by the harsh tone of her queen. But she, too, rolled back her shoulders, and in a cold, calm voice said,
"When you left the mortal realm several days ago, you were taken to the Twixt. There your rampant magic killed nearly 100 Fae who were native to the land between the Unseelie and Seelie realms. That is the massacre I am referring to."
Chapter 24. There was only so much a mind could handle. Like a circuit flooded with too much electricity, or a server attempting to take in too many messages at once, there were limits. Minerva's mind was in Black Friday, a chaotic push and shove that held up the neurons and brought the system down. People experienced this when they lost someone they loved. Sometimes they felt it after a storm or a fire, when all they possessed lay before them in ashes or splinters. It was a black cloud of doubt that effectively blocked out the rest of the world, slamming shut all five senses, and most importantly, the doorway to the mind. Minerva experienced that now. There was a vague knowledge that she needed to escape, and perhaps her body knew this more than her consciousness did, because she was moving. She was fleeing. Maybe she had more magic than she'd known she possessed, or maybe she could do what she was doing because she'd taken Caliban's magic. But portals opened and portals shut, and she was running. She didn't know where she was going, but she also did. And though she was terrified to get there, she also desperately needed to arrive. He'd left Malik's side and was swiftly striding toward Dahlia when the moving platform suddenly and jarringly tilted beneath Caliban's feet. His legs slid out from beneath him, and his magic swelled, reaching for stability. All around him, revelers and guests began screaming, tilting off balance along with food platters, pitchers filled with liquid, musical instruments from the band platform, and odds and ends that went sailing through empty air. The platform made a terrible groaning sound, and its normally invisible boundaries began sizzling with energy like an electrified fence. One man slammed into it, as the platform tilted more mightily, and his body jerked in silent agony as those electrical currents rushed through him. More screaming erupted, terrified and frantic. Caliban righted himself against a table that had slid into the band platform, then concentrated on gathering his magic around him. Once he felt there was enough there for what he wanted to do, he rose above the platform, hovering in space, and sent out a pulse of that power, drawing the immediate attention of everyone on the platform. They clung to the columns in the room or braced themselves on overturned furniture, but his magic wrapped around them, steadying them and holding them in place. "All of you," he commanded, amplifying his voice with the same magic, "transport at once back to your homes. Warn anyone who may be in the mover's path, and evacuate necessary buildings." The people on the platform were the members of his court, and attending to impromptu disasters was part of their jobs. They nodded. Seemingly at once and one at a time, they began transporting away from the platform. It was harder for them than it should have been. Caliban could see the swell and spark in their magics. It was draining them far more than it should have. Whatever spell had been cast upon the platform was very strong, and magical discord seemed to be at its heart. But the court members eventually managed, escaping through portals that appeared one after another. As they fled, Caliban's eyes scanned the tilting, chaotic crowd, searching for a shot of white hair and a white dress. It was all he wanted to see, and he'd never wanted to see anything so badly in his life. Not in 10,000 years had anything gone wrong with the mover. He wasn't stupid. There was no way he could go without linking this mishap to his queen's sudden disappearance. He changed tactics, now searching the crowd for a scarlet red dress and waves of brown hair. There. He tossed out a stabilizing load of magic and watched as the platform leveled out a bit and stopped moving. Caliban landed, broke into a determined run, and grabbed the Tuath Fae by the wrists, yanking her back out of the portal she had just opened. Dahlia Kellan screeched in surprise, stumbling into the unseelie king. Caliban waved the portal shut before roughly spinning the beautiful woman around to face him. "Where is she?" he demanded. He didn't know how he could have missed it before. All those times that he'd taken this woman to his bed, all those exchanged words and looks and touches, and he'd never noticed what he now saw so clearly, as if it were written in massive scrawling letters and she were an open book. Dahlia stared up at him in a way that she never had before. The corners of her lips curled upward, and a single brow arched. He grabbed her upper arms and squeezed them tight. Electric currents of rage-fueled magic sizzled through his fingertips, just like the ones encircling the platform.
"Where did she go?"
he bellowed. He could feel the woman's evil draped over her like a cloak, and he knew good and well that she'd done something to Minerva. She was the reason for the Queen's disappearance. Hell, she was probably partly responsible for what had happened to the mover, though he doubted she'd worked alone. The spell was powerful. Even as he stood there before Dahlia, his magic worked against the rogue spell, and the truth was, he wasn't sure how long he would be able to hold the platform aloft.
"I didn't do a thing to the little queen,"
Dahlia ground out through gritted teeth behind an uncaring expression.
"And she didn't see fit to tell me where she was going."
Caliban's grip on her arms tightened. He was trying with all his might not to outright kill what could be his sole source of information, but the platform was draining him, and his fear for Minerva was testing his patience with a grating kind of cruelty. He'd never wanted to destroy life as badly as he did in that moment.
"Perhaps she would be more forthcoming if she were to spend some time with me,"
came a calm suggestion from a familiar voice behind Caliban. He glanced over his shoulder to meet Lord Malik's ice-blue gaze. Dahlia stiffened in Caliban's grasp. He looked back down at her. The color had drained from her face. Caliban realized in that moment that she harbored real fear for the Tal. Most likely she knew that given the opportunity to feed from a Tuath Fae such as herself, they would not kill her outright. They would allow her to live as their slave. She would suffer blood drain after blood drain, possibly for years or even centuries, before she eventually gave in to the weaknesses of her body and died. There were 1,000 ways for Caliban to kill someone that were far worse, far more painful, and even far slower. But maybe Dahlia thought Caliban wouldn't kill her. Perhaps she didn't fear him as much because of what they'd shared. Maybe she thought it actually meant something to him. Whatever her reasons, they didn't matter. Caliban needed to know what happened to Minerva, and Dahlia clearly knew. If fear was going to be her motivator, and Lord Malik had to be the source of that fear, then so be it. Caliban released her and took a step back, coming in line with Malik. The two men stared long and hard at the single woman, and moment by moment, little by little, she shrank further into herself. Her eyes grew wide and her lips parted in mounting terror.
"It isn't me,"
she finally stated, her tone not nearly as sure as it had been a moment ago.
"If it had been my choice, I would have just killed her. But he wants Neogravash Ugradangan Lich."
Caliban's brows knit together as Dahlia's words began to scramble, coming out as gibberish. He glanced at Malik, but the other man appeared to be hearing the same thing, his expression just as confused. Dahlia continued, her gaze flitting back and forth between Caliban and Malik, but the volume with which she spoke then began to cut in and out as well, as if she were on a radio frequency in a building storm.
"Awilinskosh, Kuilinkan, Wachikidif, Fistram."
On instinct, Cal reached out to grab her. But his instincts, though dead-on, were simply not quite fast enough. Dahlia's form flashed in and out, like a hologram losing dimension. An odd smell filled the air for a split second, one Caliban vaguely recognized. And then Dahlia Kellen was gone. Chapter 25. Minerva Tristane would not hurt a soul in the world. So she hurt 100, somewhere just outside of it. A sing-song poem to the tune of Lizzie Borden's eulogy mimicked madness in Minerva's brain. She almost smiled. Almost. Lucky for her, she wasn't yet that far gone. When the unthinkable strikes, it takes the ground out from underneath you. Everything you once thought you knew or understood is replaced with a static kind of uncertainty. It's numbing and nauseating, and you float after that, and let life take you where it will. Life had taken Minerva to the Twixt. The final portal closed behind her, and she stood in the dark, in a clearing where a stream trickled peacefully nearby. Star and moonlight bathed the clearing in a blue-white glow, highlighting small blooms that, during the day, were probably pink and red and yellow and orange, but now were muted into different shades of grey. Trees surrounded the clearing, leading to dark and tangled forests of the kind found in fairy tales, or maybe in Germany. Here and there, mushroom rings sprouted from the ground, sporting caps of spots, stripes, and even squiggles. Nothing moved in the clearing. There was only the sound of the creak and Minerva's breathing. If there had been bodies there at one time, they were gone now. She hugged herself as a shiver of reality racked through her at the thought of those bodies. "They are long gone," came a voice from behind her. It was male and calm and polite, but Minerva didn't recognize it. She spun to face the stranger. He smiled. "I'm guessing Dahlia has only told you half of the story." He shrugged, his smile spreading. "Typical jealous Tuath. Hell hath no fury, eh?" Minerva stood frozen to the spot, her eyes glued to the grotesque figure before her, the air trapped in her lungs where it began to ice over in fear. Lungs full of frost. That was the sensation that swept through her. She'd heard the urban legends, and she'd seen the images on the internet. The Slender Man, as he'd been referred to, was normally portrayed as a very tall, exceedingly thin man with a white, almost featureless face. He stood in the shadows, half hidden by the shapes and angles around him. Sometimes he could only be seen upon close inspection, and the moment you realized what you were looking at, a coldness would scrape through you. You'd retreat from the screen and suppress a shiver. The Slender Man, however, was merely a modern fairy tale, created by a man named Eric Knudsen several years back. Minerva had read all about it one day, as she and her sister shared a common curiosity about the supernatural. It had been made for some sort of contest, then incorporated into countless other stories, mythos, and games, including Minecraft, which sported its own version of the Slender Man, the Ender Man. It was a myth, though. That was all. It was pretend. But then again, there was the man standing before Minerva at that very moment. So very, very tall, so very, very thin, dressed in a black suit that would fit no mortal, with arms that stretched nearly to his knees, a face so white it looked like paper, and features so smooth they were barely there. He had eyes like pinpoints of coal. He was a stretched-out, skinny, well-dressed snowman. She could only stay where she was and look up, her entire body encompassed in a kind of palpable terror. She could taste it in her mouth, like metal, like iron. Distractedly, she felt something trickle above her top lip, and realized her nose was bleeding. "Who are you?" she asked, almost knowing without a doubt that he would tell her he was, in fact, the Slender Man. But she hadn't actually asked the question out loud. No air would leave her frozen lungs to give voice to her query. As if he'd heard her anyway, the man said in his polite, calm, and utterly normal voice, "I am not a who, but a what." He turned, his elongated movements strange and disjointed. It was like watching a nightmare. He took a few steps to the right, circling her. "I am merely a part of something. This is the most I can materialize on this plane without the proper vessel." He stopped and turned back to face her. "That is why you are here, Wisher." He'd been king of the Unseelie realm for a very long time, hence Caliban was well practiced in the art of thinking quickly in desperate situations. The fact that this was the most desperate situation he'd ever been in was one he forcefully pushed to the back of his mind so that he could concentrate. Someone, somewhere, knew where Minerva was. One of those people was Dahlia Kellen, but Dahlia had been taken, most likely by the very same person responsible for Minerva's disappearance. Cal had already tried a location spell on Minerva. Given that he possessed some of her magic and she some of his, he'd hoped the spell would be even stronger and more successful. However, either landing the platform safely had drained him more than he'd thought, or she was being hidden by someone far more powerful than he'd wagered, because the spell failed. His best bet would be to locate someone who knew where she was instead. They might not be as shielded. Then he could ransack that person's mind and retrieve Miniver's location. Caliban was just turning away from the mess of the platform, fallen columns and felled trees, when he was approached by a very out-of-breath Tuath fey female.
"Violet,"
he exclaimed. She was Dahlia's sister. She might know.
"Your Majesty, please listen. There isn't much time."
Violet started right in, stopping before him beseechingly.
"I overheard my sister speaking with him in the shadows. I wasn't able to stop them, but I know where the Queen has gone."
"Where?"
He couldn't help himself when he took her by the arms, just as he had her sister. All he could do was not squeeze and shake her.
"She's gone to the Twixt,"
Violet told him at once.
"I went to Titania, and she's gone to Telpai. He has to get the others because—"
She swallowed hard and shook her head.
"You're going to need all the help you can get."
Caliban released her and stepped back. His mind was spinning.
"Where in the Twixt?"
But he had a feeling he knew what she was going to say even before she confirmed his suspicions.
"To the site of the massacre, but wait!"
She held up her hand to stop him as he began to call forth another portal.
"Please don't go alone. They'll expect you to do that."
Caliban paused, his whole body tensed in painful indecision. He wouldn't be doing Miniver any good if he fell directly into a trap, and he wasn't doing his sanity any good by not following after her immediately. Violet gritted her teeth and added,
"And please, don't kill my sister, Your Majesty. She's not herself, I promise."
Caliban processed her words, but ignored them. They were part of a plea that would be dealt with later. There were more important things to deal with now. He needed—
"Your Majesty."
Titania's tinkling, chiming voice was raised in alarm, and had a powerful edge to it that one would not expect from a fairy. He turned to see her running toward them with none other than his brother, Avery, and Avery's wife, Celine.
"Where's my sister?"
Celine wanted to know. That's what everyone wanted to know. Cal met Avery's gaze. Unspoken messages galore passed between them. They were headed into unknown dangers. A queen's existence was on the line, and because of that, an entire realm's welfare was as well. There were three fey royalty grouped together now.
"Good enough,"
he said aloud, knowing that the two words would silence any further protest from Violet. He raised his hand once more, calling forth the portal that he'd let drop before. Violet stepped back and out of the way, but Titania came forward and gently laid a hand on Caliban's arm.
"I'm coming as well, my lord."
Cal glanced at her.
"Suit yourself."
He finished opening the portal and stepped through. His brother and his sister-in-law followed closely on his heels. Titania brought up the rear, and the portal swirled shut behind her. Chapter 26.
"I could have attempted to use your body once it had died, and your spirit was free of it. But I have to admit, this is fresher."
Miniver continued to stand still where she was, her eyes glued to the unnaturally skinny and tall man, and his white face that resembled the visage of Odo from Deep Space Nine.
"Your sister escaped from me.
She accepted her place as queen, and once she had, she simply became too powerful for me to subjugate."
He opened his arms and shrugged like Jack the Pumpkin King.
"However, you have yet to accept who you are. You have doubts, as is made ever more obvious by the fact that you ran away from your king to come here."
At long, long last, maybe fueled by the mention of her sister in danger, or perhaps simply because she'd had enough time to stand there like an idiot, Miniver numbly came out of her stupor and asked,
"Are you the Slender Man?"
The tall, thin man laughed. It was a pleasant, utterly normal laugh.
"I can see why you might think that.
However, the name of a current mortal horror trend is an inconsiderately limiting label, if ever there was one. He straightened and became very still. Minerva watched as his form shifted, going from solid to incorporeal. He was still there, but composed of varying degrees of darkness, as if chimney smoke and empty space had taken elongated humanoid form. Just as Mr. Rushmore can tell you how gargoyles are composed of stone that has absorbed magic, and Mr. Pitch can confirm the shadow people are composed of shadow that has absorbed magic, there are fractions of space and time beyond human comprehension that do the same. Call them black holes, call them dark matter, perhaps label them as neutrinos, or even dark neutrinos. Maybe they are all of the above. He spoke to her from his smoky darkness, as if he still had lungs and a mouth. In essence, this is what I am. Minerva inhaled sharply and backpedaled as the shadowy slender man suddenly rushed toward her, moving with abnormal and unpredictable speed. She hugged herself and dropped to her knees, and then there was a flash and sizzle. She looked up to find the slender man rematerialized, but now he was closer, and this time she could tell that his eerily smooth features were not happy. Between him and herself, there was a bubble of sorts. It was a force field. With stark certainty and quite a bit of shock, she realized that it was a force field she'd thrown up herself, without even meaning to do it. She'd absorbed Caliban's magic during their lovemaking, and this was one of his abilities. She'd simply reproduced it. "You might just make the perfect vessel after all," he said softly. "At long last."
"You don't want this body," Minerva said, finding with even more shock that she had the ability to speak so well.
She straightened, coming to her knees and meeting the slender man's bizarre gaze head-on.
"It's far too sensitive. And you have no idea what the upkeep is like on a female form. I would go for a guy if I were you."
He chuckled. "As a matter of fact, I do know what a female form requires. In fact, my last form was female. And she will be mine again if all goes according to plan." He seemed to drift for a moment, his gaze leaving hers, his form slipping into the shadows behind him. "If she would only awaken." Minerva pushed herself to her feet. They felt strange, sort of prickly and painful, and her legs were weak. But she managed to make it upright, though she lost a bit of her breath when she did so. The force field around her pulsed in and out, stronger and weaker, threatening to disappear. She prayed it wouldn't.
"Who was she?"
she asked, because she wanted to buy herself some time, and also because she was actually curious. "No one you would know," he told her. "But she was magnificent. A goddess unrivaled." A goddess? Minerva felt a flush of odd and totally inappropriate pride. It was muted by the horror of her living, breathing reality, but it was still there. The monstrous force before her had once inhabited the body of a god, and now he thought Minerva might suffice as a vessel too. Who wouldn't be proud of such a thing?
"I gotta tell you," she said softly, "I think you're out of my league."
"Oh, no, love. It's very much the other way around."
It wasn't the slender man who spoke this time. The voice was new, but it was one she readily recognized. She and the slender man turned as Caliban, Titania, Selene, and the man Minerva assumed must be the Sealy King, Avery, stepped out of the forest lining and into the clearing. Minerva had no time to greet them, or to so much as acknowledge their arrival with a single word or gesture. There was not even a full second of space between the split moment that the four of them appeared, and the very next instant, in which the slender man evaporated into that incorporeal miasma of darkness again and sped toward her. This time he zapped past her shield like it wasn't even there, making her wonder just for a heartbeat why he'd bothered pretending it had stopped him the first time. And then he was inside her, and everything changed.
"No!"
Caliban was jerked roughly to a stop, and he hadn't even realized he'd been running. His arm was nearly yanked free of its socket as Avery grabbed him from behind, locking both arms in a fierce grip. Avery knew how to use his fey magic to aid in his strength. He was just that kind of man, preferring hand-to-hand combat over spells and subtlety. In this case, it was fortunate for both of them. Caliban's mind spun erroneously out of control, as before his eyes, Minerva changed. Her eyes were closed, her head had tossed back when the entity entered her form. An unfelt breeze seemed to circle slowly around her, lifting her from the ground. Her already fair skin became even paler, and inch by inch her silver blonde hair went from white to yellow to brown to black. The silver dress she wore did the same, switching shades one after another, until the gown hung from her in tattered draperies of pitch darkness. At last, she opened her eyes, revealing that her indigo blue had been replaced with the color and vibrancy of coal. Avery's arm slid free of Caliban's, releasing him. He was no longer struggling, but frozen in place, watching in helpless horror as the woman he loved was subjugated by a monster. She smiled an unlikely smile and settled that dull black gaze upon Caliban.
"As usual, the kings are too late."
Her voice was her own, but as dulled as her eyes, the fey beauty taken right out of it.
"Do you have any idea how far behind you are? I'm so many steps ahead of you, I can no longer feel you on my trail."
"Why don't you enlighten us?" Avery asked. He seemed to be the only one of them capable of speech. Caliban was too busy. His mind was cut in half. Part of it was dying inside. The other part was feverishly scheming. The Minerva entity tilted her head to one side and gave Avery an admonishing look.
"Now, what fun would that be? I wish you would get the hell out of my sister's body,"
Selene hissed at the entity through gritted teeth of rage. A white light began to emanate from the air around Minerva, and for a moment, the entity's power and Selene's wish were nearly a visible aurora borealis, like ropes of electricity that struggled with one another. Caliban held his breath. Would it really be so easy? Was all the planning he was doing in his head even necessary? But then the electric rope snapped, the aurora dissipated, the white light disappeared, and the entity laughed. Now its voice was different. It was deeper and it echoed slightly. "Nice try. But all you've done is remind me how powerful my host is. Thank you for that." At once a rush of hard power filled the clearing, slamming into Caliban and the others like a brick wall. He felt his body bruise in 24 different places as the wind was knocked from his lungs, and his form went flying. For a split second he wondered what he would slam into, and then he pulled himself together, used a bit of his power, and blinked out of the air to return to the entity. This time he reappeared standing behind Minerva, feet planted firmly, eyes burning so hot they felt they were leaving scorch marks in his face.
"You're right," he told the entity, who spun around in the air to face him. "She is powerful, but that power comes at a price."
Chapter 27 When he and Minerva had made love, their magic had mingled. She now possessed a part of his, and he a part of hers. He had no idea how long that would last, but it had lasted up to now, and that was all that mattered. He used his share of her power then and there, pulling it all together in a mass of nearly combustible magic that swirled within his chest to the point of pain. And then, as he noticed his brother and the others approach once more behind the entity that now faced him, he muttered a single wish, making sure to word it just right.
"I wish that Minerva would now know fully the terrible destruction she caused in the massacre between realms."
Because he possessed a piece of her within himself, and because he simply knew his queen to the deepest levels, he knew that her immense wisher power came at the price of immense empathy. The more you felt, the more you truly understood, and the more willing you were to fix what was wrong. This empathy was the fuel of wisher power, The problem was, there were so many things that could not be fixed, but were felt anyway. The mortal realm was full of them. Countless battles, rapes, diseases, tortures, disasters—